now entering a new forum to discuss reality, not illusion. Welcome to UFO Encounters Live with your Watchman of the Night Skies, Ronnie McMullen.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another edition of UFO Encounters Live, and I'm your host, Ronnie McMullen. Tonight, part two, abductee Thomas Reed, the fashion photographer and the founder of Miami Models, is going to go into part two. We did not get time to discuss his father and the very interesting sudden death of his father. Tonight, we're going to talk about a few things that surrounded the case. Could this historic UFO case of the Reed family, because of its classification of CE4, which is a close encounter of the fourth kind, or the case category of 3, which is physical evidence, could there be something deeper? Could this be the disappearance and the extermination of Thomas Reed's father? One of the fascinating things I find out as an interviewer of UFO cases is the many murders, deaths, disappearances that surround UFO cases. It always baffles the mind. Are we having the same scenario take place in the Reed family? It's hard to say. But I thought I would bring Thomas back on to talk about the sudden death of his father. My guest tonight is Thomas Reed. Tom, welcome to UFO Encounters Live. How you doing, my friend?
Terrific. Thanks, Ronnie, for having me.
You know, it's good to have you back. I want to go right to why we brought you back, because we, on the first segment, we never were able to talk about your father. And I think this is a huge piece of the pie in your case, and somebody's trying to hide something. So this goes even maybe further than extraterrestrial, because somebody maybe knows about you're being taken, and they're trying to hide it, or they're trying to come against it, whatever. So we're going to talk about that a little bit. But what I want to talk about, you have a very unique case, Thomas. And with this unique case, have you found that the mass media has accepted your story, you know, and you have evidence? I mean, you obviously have a classification CE4, a case category of 3 with physical evidence. So, I mean, this is not some little he said, she said case. This is the real live deal. Have you found that the mass media, you know, the stuff that we see every night, has accepted what you're saying and helped you get the story out?
Fox actually made some concessions. They were going to bring me on under the claims of this, and they like to use that word or terminology a lot. And a few minutes before I actually went on the Fox Morning Show, he actually, in some respects, refused to go on under the introduction they were going to run with. And so I sat down and opened up my the paperwork that I had and spread it across the table and had them look at it. And I said, if you think this warrants claims, I'm leaving. And they actually made some changes and brought me on with a much more respectable introduction, if you will, or at least the case itself. And so I think when you look at the facts, I think it speaks for itself. It's certainly an awful lot, and it certainly turns people's heads when they have an opportunity to review it. So with that said, I have had some very positive interviews with the major networks and that sort of thing, surprisingly well. And it could be better. I mean, it could always be better, but they have given me some respect I've showed them.
Do you ever feel guided when you're in an interview? Like they'll shut you down if you start to speak about something or interrupt you about something, or you know what I mean? To where they're kind of controlling where you go without really controlling where you go. Do you ever feel that way?
Yeah, sure. I think that, or I've had we need to go to a break, or we need to go to a commercial, or hold that thought, and then you come back and
they don't hold the thought.
They take you in left field somewhere. Sure, you
know. Uh-huh. Well, that's one of the things that kind of bothers me, and I love, you know, that's one of the reasons I brought you back, is because we didn't really get time on the first show to talk about Howard Reed. And I really think this is an important fact of your case, not that it's necessarily surrounding it, but It feels like somebody's hiding something. Do you get the same idea?
There is definitely, I think our case, if you were to say what is the one focal point that separates your case or makes it what it is, it has to do with my father.
Okay. Well, let's start on that. Obviously, maybe some of the media doesn't want to talk about this, but I do.
They won't even touch it.
Oh, they don't want to touch it, do they? Well, then no. I do. Now, in fact, it's kind of interesting. I want to bring this up before we start on your father. You've had a very interesting week, have you not? Before we record this, you've had an interesting week. You want to share about that?
I can share part of it.
Okay.
We were, or a few of us were actually putting together a MUFON conference, and where I was going to divulge just some of the information that we talked about earlier that tends to not want to be discussed. And so I was heading to this MUFON meeting with a lot of my paperwork as just kind of a courtesy thing. And we had announced that we would be speaking there and so on and so forth. And maybe a week or so before the event, my house was broken into. And I just found that I've never really been broken into before. I've had people in my home, I've had an FBI agent here, and I've had that kind of thing, but never actually had, my house has never been subject to a violation like that.
Hmm. So how did that make you feel? Do you think that was about installing fear?
My brother makes a very good point that, he texted me today and said, okay, so you haven't had any problems. You announced personal information that you're going to divulge some things that have not really been shared openly or by others due to certain circumstances. Even like having my book written, I've had people have second thoughts due to the particulars, if you will. And then I announce it, and then my house gets broken into like a week before I go to this meeting. I just find that a little odd.
Yeah,
to say the least, and our case, and if you will, or the information and the family history, seems to be a series of odd coincidental events that you try to look away, and you keep there's a denial, there's a danger in denial, so you don't want to deny the fact that something's going on here, but you don't want to see it for what it is either, because if you do, then you start to realize that wow, what do I do now, and this is bigger than me.
Right. Well, why don't we start with, why don't you give me kind of a background of who your father was?
My father, he had a doctorate in law. He ran for office. He was actually in office. He was backed by Senator Christopher Dodd. I've actually had coffee at the governor's mansion. I mean, he was when I say a political person, he wanted to run for office for all the right reasons.
Okay.
And he got out of it for all the right reasons.
Okay.
But at the same time, he was also a college professor. He was a very well liked, very respected man. In the 80s, he actually ran into another attorney who was also a Democrat, attorney Robert Bluckman, who years earlier was actually worked with John Allen Hynek with respect to, I think it was a Center for UFO Studies, maybe.
Yeah.
And this was a few years before SETI was to launch their new satellite and the height of Star Wars. So there was a lot of buzz around the subject anyway. So they were at a mixer and they were speaking. They just met casually, and Robert had voiced the fact that he had an interest in this field, and my father was kind of for one of the first times he actually had a genuine respect for somebody because of the way Robert conducted himself. He was a professional attorney, and my father spoke with him in depth about our case and what had happened in the '60s and so on, and and suggested he speak to me. And oddly enough, Robert's office was only a mile and a half from my condo in Manchester, Connecticut.
Okay.
And so my father said, you know, go over, speak to this guy. He's a great guy. You know, I trust him. Talk to him. So I pull in after work, and, you know, I got off around 3:30 or whatever. And I'd stop in periodically and speak to Robert. I'd sit across from his desk, and there was a big picture behind the chair there that had a shot that was taken by a police officer of a UFO underneath the water in Hudson River Valley, which was he was working on that as well. And I felt comfortable with him, and I shared, the events of the 60s. And because this is really unique, and this is interesting, because he knew John Allen Hynek so well, he was able to go back and look at the CE3 or CE4, what have you, classifications for the earlier reports.
Okay, I'm gonna interrupt you here because we got to go to a break, but we're gonna come back with the rest of this.
All right.
My guest is Thomas Reed. We'll be right back. Hi folks, Ronnie McMullen here for Life Change Tea. I want to share a truth with you. Many people call Life Change Tea to get help with health issues that are severe and life-threatening. They've seen their doctor, and they're now motivated to be proactive in their health. Please listen. Once you are sick, it is a hard climb. Life Change Tea can help you, but it's a hard climb. Folks, there's an easier way. Tune your body up before you get sick. A drink a day will help keep the doctor away. Cleansing your colon is so crucial to good health. Seek the easy path and order today. Order now. It's easy. Log on to GetTheTea.com. That's GetTheTea.com. The emergency room is not a place for a friendly get-together. Again, 928-308-0408, or you can order online at GetTheTea.com. Once again, GetTheTea.com.
There must be one place left in the world where the skin says it can breathe. There's gotta be one place left in the world to solitude, distance, and relief. There's gotta be one place left in the world.
Welcome back. You are listening to UFO Encounters Live, and of course, I'm your host, Ronnie McMullen. My guest today is Thomas Reed. This is part two, and you might want to go to my website, ufoencounterslive.com, and you can actually access the first show, so that you can listen to the first show and the second, put it together. I think I interrupted you when we had to go to a break, Thomas, because you were talking about visiting with Robert Blechman. You were across from him talking with him and sharing what was going on. And your dad, I guess, was halfway close with Robert, correct?
Well, they became very friendly. Certainly when Robert, you know, Robert had a lot of access to earlier cases and actually looked back into our case in Sheffield and found that there were approximately, I think it was between 30 and 50 people at the Jug End Resort, which was 7 miles from our home, that actually saw this craft over our property and was issued a CE classification. And I think when he came back with that and talked to my father and expressed his interest in the case and the fact that he found it so interesting, I think they developed a bond there.
Mm.
And later on, years later, and after speaking with me for quite some time, you know, Robert actually organized a symposium. It was October 2nd, 1992, at the United Nations with the help of the Parapsychology Society, and was able to bring in some cases in support of 33-426, which was, I think, originally introduced in 1978. And this was kind of reintroducing why they need that, which was an establishment of one particular group that everyone could filter their information to and be able to pull on that information and work together as a team on this particular subject.
Okay.
And so our case was mentioned on the backside and the back burner, if you will. It wasn't a front runner by any means. It was just in support of Cash Landerman and some other cases. But it was, I think my father respected the fact that he introduced our feelings on the manipulation of gravity and and the eruption of crickets and that sort of thing. It was mostly about the effect it had on our vehicle and so on.
Sure.
And then, of course, 14 years later, and they had stayed in touch. Over the years, my father had stepped out of, stepped down, or he actually lost his last election for mayor and was still a selectman, if you will, but he ended up getting out of that arena and became a principal of a school, and was getting ready to retire or looking in that direction.
Mm-hmm.
And 56 years old, healthy 56 year old man, and went to his principal's office, if you will, and his office, and felt violently sick and was rushed to the emergency room, and we lost him. The CDC came in, and actually, due to other people seeing lights on in the building at night and recognizing brand new ceiling tiles in his office, they went through his office, his air conditioning unit, and so on and so forth, and they did find a deadly virus that was placed in his air conditioning unit. And I say placed because they found some broken glass, so they assume it was a vial. I don't know what it looked like. I know they were considered to be red luminous sticks. Is that what they looked like? And so we lost our father. What people aren't aware of or don't like to talk about is that he was actually, and I say killed because he was killed, or we lost him, or he died on the exact same day that our case was brought before the United Nations, October 2nd. And only after he voiced his interest in doing this book on the information, not so much on our case, I think it was more the information that had filtered to him or he had gotten his hands on, being that he did have a voice and he did have people who had an awful lot of knowledge that were very into this phenomenon way back when.
So he had some background there.
Well, he had, I've got a lot of his paperwork here. He has paperwork, you know, remember Sign before Project Blue Book. He had a lot of information on that.
Do you think, and not to interrupt you, but do you think that obviously you were taken at, your first stage was what, how old?
I was six.
Okay, so six was your first, and he obviously knows about that, wasn't necessarily involved in that first deal, but he knows about it. Do you think that, and usually the cases with abductees is their parents, usually one or both, have been taken. Do you think your father was ever taken? Did you ever get, I mean, whether he discussed it with you or whether you just had an intuition that said something's happened to Dad?
No, I don't. My father, I can say with confidence that he was not.
Okay.
Everyone, we have nine people in our family that's Rh negative. My father was legally adopted us. In 1972, because he wasn't my birth father.
Okay.
A lot of people don't know that either, although I consider him my father, because once he legally adopts you, and not to mention he was the only father I really ever knew.
Right.
And he had been around since I was about 4 years old.
Okay.
But
so he's all you ever really knew?
No, he was not Rh negative. And whether that has anything to do with it or not, I can't speak for that, but he did not have, he wasn't around when this happened in 66, 67, and 69. He was part of our family, although he lived in Patchogue, Long Island, and would come up on the weekends and was very active with us when we were very young, and has always been terrific to us. But no, he never had anything firsthand.
Now, when you say he come up on the weekend, so he never was a 7-day live-in father?
Well, not in the 60s.
No. How about later on?
Oh, God, yeah. No, he was... He moved in, my mother and he were, he did not move in our home until they were married. My mother, a lot of people don't know this either, had her bachelor's in ministry and was very much on, she had two children.
Sure.
No one was going to move in if they weren't married.
Right.
And so they married in 1972 and he moved in with us.
Okay, so then he was like real dad type idea, blah, 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 was there.
Right.
Okay.
Until then, he would come up on the weekends. He was, you know, New York City was only, what, an hour and maybe 2 hour, you know, away, really.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, so he was there. Now, did you ever get the feeling that Robert Bletchman was taken? Did you ever get an intuition to say he was and why he, you know?
I know for a fact Robert told me that he had seen crafts along with his wife, Adrian. So I know that he had seen what he would reference as a UFO, whether or not he anything above that, no, but he certainly had an interest in it, and I know firsthand from him directly that he did actually see a UFO himself.
Okay, so he actually saw one, but did he ever give you the hint that he had been taken? Because there's a whole big difference between a sighting and an abduction.
When I spoke to Robert, back in the 80s, it was more about us, and he would share his interest in us and that he had seen something and that this was taken by a police officer and that sort of thing. He was one really doing the questioning. I at the time, even felt it was hard for me to talk about. It wasn't easy at the time. And so did I ask him anything really that deeply? No. Pretty much respected the fact that he was a friend of my father's. He was an attorney, and I was a kid at the time.
We're going to take a break, and we'll come back on the other side right after these messages.
If you would like to make contact with the host, email Ronnie at ufoshow@msn.com. And make contact.
Carl Sagan once wrote that the questioning mind needs to be instilled with both skepticism and wonder, for the universe is a pretty big place, filled with undelved mysteries, sciences, and life that we've barely begun to comprehend. Every month, Intrepid Magazine brings you both the wondrous and the skeptical. Intrepid Magazine focuses on science, metaphysics, UFOs, politics, conspiracies, and unexplained phenomena, all offered up by Intrepid's cadre of writers and contributors, comprised of a host of seasoned authors, pundits, and recognized names in their fields. The universe is indeed a big place, and where other magazines leave off, Intrepid Mag is just beginning. Subscribe to Intrepid Magazine today at www.intrepidmag.com. That's www.intrepidmag.com.
There's uncertainty in healthcare. Hi, I'm Ronnie McMullen. The root word to health has been forgotten. You should be paying attention to your health. Life is important. The people at Life Change Tea know this. Their customers experience change with every drink. If you have problems with weight, cholesterol, blood pressure, constipation, or liver problems, you need to call. Change your health now. 928-308-0408. Again, 928-308-0408. One more time, 928-308-0408. Or you can log on to getthetea.com. That's getthetea.com. Read the numerous testimonies from their satisfied customers. Do not wait until it's too late. This world suffers from lack of proper nutrition in our food supply. Our water carries multiple chemicals and our air is polluted. Call now for help. 928-308-0408 or log on to getthetea.com.
All veils and misty, streets are blue, almond blood that chill divine, a soft silken moment goes on forever, and we're leaving broken hearts behind. You mystify me. I need perfection, some twisted selection that tangles me. Mystify me.
Welcome back to The Other Side. You are listening to UFO Encounters Live, and my guest is Thomas Reed. Tom, I'm looking at this case, and obviously your father died. Your father was an attorney. He was a PhD. He was in government. I mean, he knows what happened to you kids. So he's fighting to maybe do something right to get the information out.
Exactly.
You find
exactly what he was doing.
That he, you know, here he's, I call it murder. So he's murdered. And did you find anybody working on the case to start questioning and saying, this is not anything but a murder? Did anybody say those words to you? Anybody say, you know, the foul play? Did anybody kind of say, you know, your father's done wrong here, we need to get into this? Did you have any police officers, detectives, private investigators, anybody say those words?
We had, well, when the CDC came in and they found that vial in the air conditioning unit, it was pretty obvious that that had been what had taken his life.
Yeah.
Although they didn't say at the time that they knew for certain. The CDC was kind of tight-lipped about it at that point. They did speak with my brother. My brother went on a local news there, and they did run a little ad in the New York Times, a little something about it. But they didn't actually at that point say he was murdered. Although I can tell you that there was some money offered not to pursue it. And
money offered not to pursue what?
Pursue because this happened in a school.
Yes.
My mother was. If you go back to Connecticut, I mean, it's no secret. I mean, there's actually been a holiday given to my father, a proclamation. October 6th is now a recognized holiday for him. They gave him a bench. They really tried to make and do the right thing by him, by the city. But at the same time, because this was a deadly virus that was in the building, that was a school, they had now shift all these children, move them to a different school. They had to make an awful lot of changes.
Yes.
They had to condemn and shut down that school. Now, the school is shut down. And you can find that online. And my mother, because it was at the school, she didn't know what to do or who to go after, so she started writing these letters to the city and the school board. And basically, she got a call from an attorney that said, "If you just go away, you know, we'll give you such and such, you know, this much money," and that was it. And actually, she ended up taking it because she now lost her income. My mother doesn't work, and I don't want to bore your listeners, but you know, my mother is now, you know, she, my father was the breadwinner, and he went at 56 years old, so he's pretty young. So it kind of side, you know.
So the city, if and let me hear you right, the city paid your mother X amount of dollars.
It didn't actually come from the city. It came from an attorney who apparently, I think it came from a combination of the school board's attorneys and the city. I don't know exactly.
But the city was involved.
The school board was involved in it, yeah.
And the city was involved?
Not
sure.
I believe so. But
okay.
Yeah.
So, and was it a real sizable amount? I mean, we don't need to know exact numbers, but was it, you know, was it enough to live off of for a long, very long time?
You could live off it for a year or so.
Okay.
Yeah.
So your father died for a year's worth of pay.
Well, my mother will, yeah, well.
I mean, and I'm not blaming your mother. I'm just saying,
no,
they're saying, hey, go away. Don't leave us alone because this is
not, pursue it,
it's not looking good for us.
Right. Don't pursue it. And so on top of that, he was basically given a yearly memorial.
How did Bletchman feel about this?
Well,
I mean, because they were, by this time, you know, by the time your father was killed, they were probably pretty close. So did you ever talk to Robert?
They definitely stayed in contact with each other. Both were, you know, Child Left Behind, you know, the big events.
But did you talk to Robert and get his ideas about what happened here?
Well, after, actually, no, I did not speak to Robert after my father passed because, twofold, Robert went not too much longer, but at the same time, you know, we were pretty wrapped up and going up for the, dealing with the, wrong choice of words, supporting my mother. She was very he was devastated. And
yeah.
And so by the time I had thought about it or wanted to speak to Robert about things, he had already passed as well.
He passed away.
Mm-hmm.
How long after your dad?
About a year.
So a year later, now Robert goes. And did he go, how did he die? Did he just die natural causes, or?
It was alluded to in one article that I think that he passed from a fight with some rare form of cancer.
Okay. And he just, boom, bam, and he wasn't sick for years or anything. He just, boom, was gone.
If he was ill, I think my father would have mentioned something.
Yeah, because they were close.
They were.
I mean, they may,
yeah, they
maybe
known
they
each
didn't
other
go to
for an awfully long time, and they were both Democrats. They both spoke a lot. I think my father would have said, "Hey, you know, Robert's not doing
well." Well, they have the same interest. I mean, they, you know, I'm sure maybe they didn't go have lunch every day, but on the same token, you know, they probably,
yeah, they met for a drink here and there. Yeah,
they knew each other's phone number. This was they
oh,
were
sure.
Yeah. So a year later, Robert is gone, and did anybody ever kind of feel like that was a suspicious kind of weird thing, or did they just go, oh, poor Robert?
I have to say that I think that ever since my father on the same day, I think that there's been an awful lot of, this was not a coincidence, this was not a bizarre thing, this was not his death or murder was not caused by something outside what it was. When you look at the date, October 2nd, and you know that our case went before the United Nations on October 2nd, and then the person who actually spoke on your behalf or organized this event in support of 33-426 at the United Nations, where your case was mentioned, goes shortly after your father, and then the doctor who agrees to go public on some things, dies 8 weeks after his report.
So, whoa. So we have a doctor now that has died, as well as Robert Bletchman, as well as Howard Reed, your father?
Michael Buckner, actually, had evaluated my brother, my son, and the family. This was in 2010, after the event with my brother and which left the radiation readings and the magnetic fields that was what fueled everyone to look into our case again and bring all this to the forefront was the case in Brownsburg, Indiana with my brother.
Okay.
When the Detective White came out and some Bigelow people in the Bigelow Aerospace, Star Team, all that, you know how that works.
Yeah.
Came out and the local officers, if you will, there was mention that, my brother, I can't believe this happened again. You know, this is so crazy. You know, this is, you know, I thought this was long over with. And, of course, what do you mean it was long over with? You know, then it goes into what happened with us. And then Officer White asked us to take a polygraph test, which I did. And also, I'd like you to meet why don't you see this doctor? So they looked at these wounds that he had in his chest, which were kind of over just at the bottom of his chest plate, which apparently was a direct line up into a gland that produces some T cells for the immune system, which was of interest. So he went to see a doctor about that. And then, of course, there's a second opinion. So we met this doctor here that Officer White knew, and we sat with him, and he evaluated my son and did some testing with him and tested with my brother. And then Officer White said, look, this is the case, and this is why I asked you to evaluate these people. Would you speak at an event, which was a MUFON event in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, and the doctor was lost his life 8 weeks later, a few weeks before the event. He never made the event.
So he never made the event. And how did he die, if you don't mind me asking?
I called his wife's ex-wife's secretary and was told that he was asphyxiated. Detective White also made some calls. It looks like he came home on a Friday. It was a Friday. He came home after work. He had a condo, a townhouse. He had opened up the front door, and he was attacked from behind and found. He never so much as made it to put the keys away. He never made it to the kitchen.
So he was truly murdered?
Yeah, so was my father.
Well, yes, but they play in the roundabout thing. Well, I think this, I think that, and then, of course, the rare cancer with Bletchman, so, you know, that's another one of those. But this one, he actually was flat-out murdered. I mean, this was a murder case. Question, did they ever find the murderer?
No.
Oh, they didn't?
No.
No. It just case gone cold.
Absolutely.
No fingerprints, no...
I haven't heard a thing about it, and I speak with Officer White periodically.
And is Officer White, is that in his jurisdiction?
Actually, White is now retired.
Okay.
However, he has an awful lot of pull. He has a detective type of business now on his own.
Okay. So is he still going and looking into this?
He's got a lot of pull. He puts me in touch with people. He tries to make some phone calls, and no, it's over and done with. It's just a shut case. And this is Tennessee, too. Not, you know, it's a little different breed here. And that's a...
Okay.
Saying anyone
right.
who's listening from Tennessee, I'm sure they'll tell you the same thing.
Okay.
It's a little different here. It's,
so...
It was a subject. We're in the Bible Belt, so...
So we have three people here that have lost their lives and over a case of bringing out a UFO story that, you know, an abduction case that has actually taken place. Why do you think, Thomas, that three people died over your case?
That is a great question, and that is why I speak out. I need to find out myself. My gut tells me, which is what I follow the most, is that my father had or knew something and had a document or two that he was going to publish in his new book.
Let me ask you this. In your abductions that you remember, okay, and I'm sure there's some that you don't remember, but let's use the ones you do remember. Did you ever go to any, in the abduction, did you ever go to any kind of military installation?
No.
No. Was it always ship-like?
It was, well, I remember a large... dark, muggy room, and to be honest with you, I can't say it was ship-like because I wouldn't know, really, quite honestly.
Well, when I say ship-like, usually,
I saw the outside of it.
Weird lights inside.
Oh, no, yeah, my family saw, we saw it come off to the left side of the car, we watched the floodlights in the woods, we saw the whole thing. Now, what happened after that, I can't, you know.
Do you ever remember an abduction where there were military vehicles, there were men dressed in, you know, attire that was military in any way, shape, or form?
No,
nothing?
I did not. The only thing that the most that could possibly mirror that would be the large, muggy room that I was in because I have no idea what that was. But
okay.
I did go out a door that was very lit up and so on. But no, I don't believe so.
Did you ever in your abductions have... men or women, normal, not a crossbreed, show up in your nightmare dream abduction cases? Did you ever have regular people that were in them?
Yeah, and these were always, I was never asleep when anything, like in bed when this happened, but no, I did hear voices. When I was younger, I was 9 years old, I heard some crying out, some screaming.
Yeah.
I thought, or at least I wanted to think, I would imagine, that it was my mother crying out.
Okay.
Alien Mysteries, that did our TV show, made it look like my brother was laying right next to me. He was not. I didn't even see him there.
Okay. So you heard your mother. Did you ever see any human beings in your abductions?
No, I just heard.
Just heard them.
Voices crying out. And it was down a hallway, not across a huge intersecting hallway.
So in your abductions, you never saw a human being, always some kind of extraterrestrial?
Yes, that's true. It looked like an insect, basically.
Never saw any military vehicles, never saw any...
Now, in 1966, very, very first time that this happened, when I had this big willow tree thing, and I saw this body of water, and it was... That took my attention off my brother, who was standing behind me. I did see what looked like a spacesuit. And I don't talk about that much because I can't make sense of why I saw a spacesuit, but I did see a suit that looked like a spacesuit.
Something like when you're talking a spacesuit,
smaller.
You're talking about like an astronaut.
Sort of, yeah.
Okay. I got to take a break, and we'll go and return with Thomas Reed right after this. Thank you.
try to surprise people.
I think that all of us were really fascinated by the way U.S. government intersects with such an extraordinary intimacy with multinational corporations that profit from war and chaos. And we discover that so many of the world leaders, the people who make the decisions that impact on the entire population of the planet, they're the same people.
You're U.S. government property, $30 million weapon.
Somebody got into our heads with big steel-toed boots, cable cutters, and a chainsaw, and they went to town. Neurons got exposed, and circuits got rewired. Our brain cells got obliterated.
I don't remember what happened. I send you to be invisible. I send you because you don't exist.
These are not supposed to exist. These are only theoretical.
They're inside my head. I dream things, terrible things that can't possibly have happened.
We try to surprise people. Welcome back to the last segment of UFO Encounters Live. My guest is Thomas Reed, a very wild case. And Thomas, looking at this, people are dropping dead around you, and then you're telling me, before I put you on radio, that your house has been ransacked. So we're not talking about something that's died off and that's, you know, turned cold. And then you're telling me that the doctor that was taken out, that basically saw your brother and said, okay, this is this and this is that, and he's going to speak at a MUFON concert, a MUFON get-together, and he doesn't make it. And he's literally goes into his house and he's, what, strangled?
Asphyxiated right from behind, I believe.
Okay, so they grabbed a piano wire, they grabbed a... And that's usually what they do, some kind of piano wire. That's how Phil Schneider died. So they love this kind of thing. I guess it's mafia-orientated, I don't know. So they kill this guy, and does the police officers... And I always hear this because, you know, I have a big interest in law enforcement. Did they come and they, you know, get fingerprints and, you know, try to find out who killed this doctor? Did they do any of that?
I think it was just swept under the carpet. I mean, you can find it online that he passed away and it had, you know, a little something on him, Michael Buckner, actually.
Any fingerprints on your father or you know, when they found the tiles that were different and they found the vial, did they dust that for fingerprints or DNA or any kind of anything to see who, what, where, you know?
There was a small little something about it, and it was in the New York Times briefly, something about... a breakout of Legionnaire's disease in the area, and people had gotten sick and passed away. But, yeah, you don't close a school for that, and you don't call in the CDC and find a deadly virus in an air conditioning unit. So everything's been swept under the carpet.
Your father is an attorney, and obviously we have attorney Blechman as well, but your father's an attorney. He's a doctor, and he's, you know, has his PhD in political run. So this guy's, you know, deep in this stuff.
He had a voice.
Yeah, exactly. And yet, this something goes and wipes out this school, and they're like, let's just close the school.
His computer was wiped out, too. The laptop was, somebody had formatted the C drive on his laptop computer.
Hmm. So, and then we have, now Blechman dies a year later, and then all of a sudden this doctor dies, and of course the doctor dies probably a very horrific death as well, because he's just, you know, plain old strangled like the old days. And nobody goes after the murderer. I think this is very interesting.
It's been just...
Nobody goes after the murderer with your father. Nobody looks into the cancer with Blechman. Nobody goes into the murder of, you know, Buckman. Yeah. And meanwhile, you still got stuff going on because somebody, you know, came in your house, ransacked it. And what if you would have been there?
Yeah, I also had... an organization stopped by and sit me on my front steps. June 6th, they were here, actually. And I think it was Key Point, something out of Colorado, some government agency connected with Homeland Security, actually had spoke with me for about 60 minutes and asked me if I frequent out of country, if I was savvy with computers, and does my mother still live here. And And when I asked why they were here, they told me that they would be asking the questions, not me. I asked to go inside of the house for a moment. They told me no, I could not. I said, well, I've got an iron on the ironing board, and I walked in my front door and went up the stairs, and I told my son, and I said, look, you know, this is not good. And he ran outside with his little cell phone and tried to take out the garbage and to get a picture of this guy. And, yeah, it's been strange. I mean, there's definitely something going on here that is, I don't know. I be honest with you, I used to think this was just some crazy thing that happened with us as kids, and we were at the wrong place at the wrong time. But, you know, has been a lot of weird...
it's not looking like that,
power.
Thomas.
There's been a power about this. You know, we live near Command Aerospace. We live near Pratt & Whitney. Electric Boat was not that far.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the United Nations was, you know, not that far from our house either. I mean, everything was, like, centrally located. We were, like, in the middle of all this stuff. And these people were just, you know, my dad is the reason I talk out about it. But it's not just my father. There's a lot going on here. And, you know, sometimes, I mean, I got a bulletproof vest in my closet, you know.
Well, two other men have died besides your father. Your house has been ransacked. I think this is, let's just go here, okay? I'll ask you a question. You don't want to answer it. That's totally fine. Mm-hmm. Do you think this has anything to do with a cover-up, some kind of military black ops, secret society, whatever? Do you think there's something else more involved than just abduction?
Yes.
Okay. Do you think that your father had some information that somebody didn't want to be shown?
Absolutely.
What information do you think that it's possible? Because you're it looks like, and I didn't know your father by any means, but it looks like he was pretty savvy. He knew his stuff. So what information could he have had that would have cost him his life?
Well, my father was very savvy. He was a very good-hearted man and wanted to do things for the right reason, but he also was someone that if he felt right or wrong about something, he would voice it. And if someone told him not to say something or not to talk about something, he would, I think he felt confident enough that he was going to say what he wanted. So I think that there's a very good possibility that my father had gotten something that, and I have to be open-minded a little bit here, that I used to think this was just about, us kids and the UFO, you know, the UFO and then what we saw and the alien, you know, whatever this was in Sheffield, Massachusetts. But I think it goes much deeper than that. I think that he had gotten some paperwork that either very possibly may have had connections with the government and extraterrestrials, and maybe that it did say or show or point to something that might have alluded to our particular family.
Hmm.
If not ours, maybe someone else's, but I definitely think that, and the more I think about it, the more I think that is probably what took place with our family and why we've had this ongoing pestering, if you will.
Well, let me ask you this.
Yeah.
So let's go there with your father. Let's say that's the case. So then why did Bletchman have to die? And then the other question is going to be, obviously, why did the doctor have to die?
I think that Robert Bleckman may be the one who handed him the paperwork, or Robert Bleckman was, and again, this is speculation, but Robert seemed to be the one who really had his hand in the cookie jar, and my father was very interested because he knew this to be a fact with our family, even though it didn't happen to him, he knew this to be factual, and he saw the effects on this family. I mean, your body doesn't lie. Your body, you know, your body never forgets, and you would see it, you know, and knew the testimony from others back in his day. He knew this happened, and he was very supportive, and I think that because he relied on Robert a lot, that Robert also appreciated the fact that my father respected him and filtered a lot to him, along with other people that I think were affiliated with Robert. I'm pretty sure my father got his hands on something that
right
may have been more than he certainly should have seen.
So let me ask you this. Officer White, which says helped you with a lot of stuff, told your brother to go to, if I didn't get this wrong, told your brother to go to a certain doctor, which that doctor's now dead. So mm-hmm. Officer White being a detective, and I'm sure he's not a slacker, why did he not have enough pull to connect the dots to say, to understand these deaths and understand what was going on, because he was kind of in the background moving things around as well, was he not?
Well, he got into it after 2010 with this incident with my brother and why he had us going to have to take the polygraph test, because he just was blown away by what our history was about. And
sure.
Just to make sure that what we were saying was accurate.
Was true. So
and
now the doctor dies. Does he not pull strings to say, you need to go over this house and check it out? And do you know what I'm saying? It seems like it just kind of went cold. And you're saying now Officer White is retired. So it doesn't make sense to me.
Well, Officer White was also at the last MUFON meeting.
Hmm. What was he doing there?
He was working in conjunction and organizing it now. So
he was. He was organizing a MUFON.
Yeah, he works. When he came out and spoke with us about our event in Brownsburg, Indiana. If what I read and what he told me and what I understand is to be accurate, it was right after the Bigelow had introduced the $600,000 to support the star team from Bigelow, or the funded team by Bigelow.
Hmm.
And we were one of the first cases afterwards, because it was actually March 30th, which is right within weeks after they got their funding. And Officer White, Detective White, was one of those people that was actually paid by them too. He was one part of that star team funded group and was one of the first people to get involved in it. Now he's very active with
the star team and with this whole
right.
thing.
Exactly.
How interesting. So, okay. So we'll just kind of leave that where it needs to be. Unfortunately, we are out of time. And, wow, your case just keeps going deeper and deeper. So definitely we'll have you back soon. And thank you for doing the second part. I hope that you find the answers and somebody jumps in here and goes forward to find out why your father had to lose his life.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I said an awful lot today.
Well, I think it probably needed to be said.
Yeah.
Thomas, thank you again for being on the show and being so candid and sharing so much. And again, we'll have you back very soon. Thank you very much.
You're welcome, Ronnie. Thank you.
Again, I want to thank my guests for being on the show. A lot of times these guests, especially abductees, and I really shouldn't just pick on them, all the people that come on the show, this is sensitive material. This is not for sensationalism. This is the real deal. This is what's going on. So I do thank the abductees, because many times they're told that this isn't happening, this is not real, and it's very hard on them. So again, thank you, my guests, for coming on. And again, if you know of somebody or you're thinking about sharing your story, you can always email me at ufoshow@msn.com. That's ufoshow@msn.com. Next week, my guest is going to be Jesse H. Long Jr. He was in the film industry, but again, the same scenario. Since he was 5 years old, he has been taken. His brother was taken as well, and he's going to be sharing his story, so you're not going to want to miss next week. Again, UFO Encounters Live is the website, ufoencounterslive.com. And again, my email is ufoshow@msn.com. Remember, be aware of your surroundings. And of course, good night.
You've been listening to Roddy McMullen, your watchman of the night skies on UFO Encounters Live. If you'd like to visit us during the week, log on to www.ufoencounterslive.com and make contact.